It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along for another edition. Good to see my partner, Captain Mike Ward. Good to see you,
Sean. And great day today.
Yeah, a great day and a lot to talk about. You know, last week we had waterfowl coordinator for the state of Alabama, Seth Maddox, on.
Right.
And we were talking about a situation. And yes, I was, you know, boasting a little bit about getting drawn in the Sandhill Crane Lottery. But the rest of the time, we talked about duck season, the expectations from May pond counts, and what we can expect in Alabama this year. So we dug into that.
That's right.
The future.
Yeah.
The future, what could happen here in a few weeks with the start of duck season. It is interesting for duck hunters to think about with this drought we're in. You know, could be good for us. We talked about that with Seth. You know, those of us that hunt marsh or hunt permanent water might be good because there's not a lot of, you know, slack water. I mean, how about up in the Black Belt?
Yeah,
in the Black Belt.
Dried up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been bragging that I put my tractor in places I should never have put it in and got out of there, you know, did some work I couldn't do in the past because it's been so dry out there. And that could be a good thing for duck hunters out there. But we started talking with Seth Maddox as well about what was historically the Mobile Tensaw Delta and the duck hunting around here. And I think it's a perfect time to bring on these two gentlemen onto the show to talk about the Mobile Tensaw Delta, or as we all grew up calling it, the Causeway. And I could say Mr. Gonzalez and Mr. Marston are in here, or I could introduce them by their handles. We got Dude and Pee-wee in here as well. Good to see y'all.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
And a lot of people know Arthur Gonzalez.
Yes.
By Arthur.
Yes.
Everybody knows Dude Marston.
But you know, when this was discussed, they said, you know, it'd be great to talk about old duck hunting stories with Dude and Pee-wee. And I said, you know, any podcast that lists that people we're going to talk to is Dude and Pee-wee. I said, this is going to be good. It's going to be good stuff. Welcome, board. Glad to have you here. Good to have you back on. Dude, thanks for coming on.
I appreciate it, Sean. Glad to be here.
Now, the Delta that I think about, and I'll harken back, and young guys will be like, man, you started hunting in the 80s. I said, yeah, I started hunting in the 80s. But then I realized there were so many people before me, and I was kind of coming in, I think, at the end of one era and the beginning of this new era, and the stories I heard about how it used to be in the Delta are amazing, and y'all were there for that. When did both of you, Mr. Marston and Mr. Gonzalez, when did you start hunting the Causeway?
Well, I hunted with my dad right after the World War II. He came back, and he was a hunter before the war, but after the war, and finally, a little while after the war, he could finally buy some shotgun shells. Before that, it was not available, but we started hunting. I was probably 10 years old, 12 years old, and I was with him. And we hunted all over the Delta in those years. There was quite a few ducks, and we hunted up north of the Causeway, and then eventually we moved south of the Causeway with big rafts of canvasbacks and gadwalls, pintail, a whole bunch of stuff out there. So we had a whole lot of luck out on south side of the Causeway in those years. But if you go back to the Causeway, I was thinking when I got your call about being here, you know, that Causeway's been there since 1927.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time. And of course, they closed up the bays. Environmentally, I'm thinking it's a disaster what they did. But we live with it. And in fact, when Pee-wee Gonzalez and I, we used to build our blinds together out there in the Causeway. This would be in probably in the, 70s, Pee-wee, something like that?
Late 60s, early and through the 70s.
Got tired of mud hunting and finally walked with hip boots and hunted on the Causeway outside. It was fun. We had a good
south of the Causeway.
South of
we get a little purchase where there's a little more sand in that mix. But kind of paint a picture for us that is post-World War II. The Causeway's there. And there's so many things that, I mean, I came into in the 80s that are gone, you know, I tell people, you know, you get a Big Baddie Burger at Max, and they're like, what are you talking about? And I realize, you know, so much has changed. What did the Causeway look like that you can remember when you first started? I mean, how many structures are there? What's it look like then?
It was like virgin territory, a lot of it. There was some camps on some of the creeks, that some of the little bays north of the Causeway, Baygrass, Little Baddie, Big Baddie. They had certain people had their little notch up there, and they would. If you went, you thought about going in there, you'd get a big stare. You thinking you're going to drive your boat in their bay? They had them protected in a lot of ways. And I can give you some names, but I'm not going to do it. So anyway, I don't know. Just I had a Stouter. Daddy finally got a Stouter. We had it at the Roundtree Camp, Jim Benson's camp. Y'all, you remember that?
I do.
Jim was right. Just past the Tensaw River Bridge on the left.
Okay.
And he had a ditch going to the Tensaw River, and the other ditch went to Chocolata. So Daddy had his Stouter there, and as soon as I could drive, I was there every opportunity I could do. I was up north of the causeway, south. I was hunting something somewhere.
Absolutely. And so, what blunt nose? What'd you have? What was your Delta boat? What Stouter?
It was just a typical 14-foot Stouter. I had a 12 Buccaneer, and I had it all jacked up so I could get over those little shallow spots.
Yes.
And I'd lightweight it, and I probably weighed 120 pounds in that time. I would go anywhere that boat would run, I'd go. So that's kind of how it all turned out. We had a lot of fun. There were quite a few ducks, Sean, in those years. I can't tell you how many. It was Grand Bay, for example, it was just loaded with gadwalls and widgeons and everything. I mean, it was just rafts of ducks everywhere.
You know, we talk about duck hunting and pressure, you know, and whether it's private or public, what pressure does to duck numbers or where they are. What was, and I would come back to those species, but what was pressure like? Let's say y'all are going out on a Saturday morning. Let's say it's opening weekend. You're going to go into Grand Bay, you're going to go into Chocolate, or you go to Del Van. How many blinds are in there? Is it 50? Is it two? Is it none?
It's probably Grand Bay, for example. There were blinds on the all over. There was Smith Pocket up the north end. There was always a blind in there. Some of the Smith Camp people had that kind of cornered. But other than that, down the West Bank, there was three or four blinds, and they were all right close to the bank where the grass, where the ribbon grass was. And the rafts were out in the middle of the Grand Bay, and they would eventually, some few ducks would decide to come close enough to want a decoy.
But nothing's changed. Some will pick up. Look at them all.
Thing,
yeah.
Same thing.
You talk about that ribbon grass, too. And, I mean, there are places we still have ribbon grass, but I hear, you know, so much of what we're hunting is milfoil. I hear stories of polecat from the old days that said polecat was nothing but ribbon grass. Y'all remember it that way?
I don't remember polecat. They aluminum company there,
Alcoa,
all in, and it kind of turned into a muck.
Yeah, it still is, really. It still is. But I mean, they said that, and we see ribbon grass a lot. We'll hunt that south of the causeway, but that was a lot more, it seems like from the stories, it was a lot more prevalent in the Delta than it is now.
There was a lot out there. Peewee and I used to hunt out there, and we'd build our blinds in the same location, and Peewee would tell them about that ribbon grass was out there. It choked
your
motor
down. Yes, it was quite thick. I got to tell you a ribbon grass story real quick about Grand Bay. My son Arthur was fishing recently up in the riverbank right near Grand Bay, and a manatee came up to his boat, and he scratched it on the nose with his hand, and the manatee just did flips out there and came back and backed off a little way and just stayed there for a half an hour.
So wait a second, Arthur made a friend? Now, the first manatee I saw in Alabama, I saw on the Tensaw River probably 15, 18 years ago, but I did not pet or harass. So tell you, he'll be listening. Yeah, I did not harass the manatee. I didn't make a friend. No.
Arthur made a friend.
Of course he did. But, you know, we talk about the grass composition, and also you were mentioning here, you just talked about Grand Bay specifically. So let's go down the list of ducks. I mean, you mentioned widgeon. Now, gray ducks, gadwalls, still, even though the numbers we're looking at, and we'll compare kind of what the numbers were on the causeway back then and what they are duck-wise now, gadwalls, gray ducks make up a lot of them. But you started talking about pintails and widgeon. I tell you, a widgeon is a rare dang thing anymore on the Delta.
They are.
Well, they were there then. I've got some good memories of limiting out on widgeons.
One of my favorites. One of my favorites. So, Grant, and so if you're hunting in that Stouter with that, would you say you run the 12
Buccaneer? That's before they had the auxiliary tanks, too. You had to pour the gas in the back of the motor.
So, yeah, but I was going to ask you how long it took, let alone how many gas fill-ups it took to get from the causeway to Grand Bay with a 12 Buccaneer.
It wasn't that bad. It was fast enough. It was the plane of It was good enough. Depends on how many decoys you had, especially if you didn't have any of those wooden ones that soaked up all the water and weighed 300 pounds trying to pick them up.
So were y'all hunting, when you first started hunting, I guess you would have been hunting wood decoys, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and you had to, when you bought them, you went over to Alabama Mobile, what was it? The Trap Company in Pascagoula.
In Pascagoula. It was
Animal Trap Company.
Yeah. And then you had to put them in a wash tub and weight them so they would float with the head up. Otherwise, they'd roll over sideways. So you had to.
We used to call them Pascagoula rollovers.
You had to put red weights on them to get them to float with the head up.
And, I mean, what is it like now to think about those days and then look at, I mean, even over the last 20 years, but since then, the prevalence, I mean, you can get great waterproof clothes. You can get cheap decoys that float upright. You can get, better shots. I mean, it's a different world.
Of course.
And you got boats and motors and get up there in about 3 minutes.
Oh, I know.
And the spinners, I see Mr. Gonzalez doing the spinning wing thing. But, you know, that was something that when it kind of hit the market, and I remember the first time I was over, a spinner was in, I was in north end of Bay Minette Basin up there, up towards the Finger, up towards Yancey, ditch. And it was like nothing I'd ever seen. I mean, we limited in about 7 minutes, and we sat there watching, and we said, this is the most incredible thing ever. But I don't know, that wasn't one of our big changes, you know, that educated a lot of them.
One of the early changes was when they came out with the paper mache decoys. That was a big change.
And I bet you that lightened up the boat a lot.
Of course. And, of course, they didn't last long. You got them beat up pretty much just because they were wet. And you throw them all in a sack, and they all kind of lost their noses and heads and all that kind of thing. But anyway, that was a big – and then they came out with some plastic ones.
Yeah.
But when you shoot – when you hunt on the causeway and you're shooting diving ducks, they don't fly very high.
That's right.
So when you kill one, you also sink about 3 decoys.
Yeah. A lot of us still live that world here, patching decoys.
When I started hunting, when I had the availability of money and an outboard motor and rented boats at Shell Bank Fishing Camp.
Explain that. There's a lot of people listening to us right now that don't know that history about that. You would own a lot of people own the motor, but you wouldn't own a boat.
I didn't own a boat at that time.
So you should put the motor in the trunk or whatever and go?
In the trunk.
Yeah, it was all rental.
3 or 4 sacks of decoys. I'd take the back seat out of my old Ford and put the sacks of decoys in there, and then go to Shell Bank and rent a fishing boat,
and put your engine on that boat.
Put all my bamboo blind material in there, and go south from there. You know,
in the 50s, there were about 3 or 4 camps on the causeway that I'm trying to think of them, but one of them was Jim Benson's, and I think they call it Roundtree, and then it was. Shell Bank was one, and Archery's was another, but
Archery's,
they all had these
Archery's.
So-called fishing boats, and they were made by Stouter.
Right.
And they were heavy duty, so they would last a long time, about half-inch plywood all the way around.
Yeah, they weren't made for just being light.
They wouldn't plane off at all. You just kind of putt down the river. Not only that, he's talking about having a load of decoys and all the other stuff you got to have in there. So you wouldn't go very fast anywhere when those rental boats.
That's for sure.
Stouters came along. That was a big breakthrough. And even beyond that was when they finally had a trailer you could use.
Oh, man.
It's funny. We're going to come back from the break and talk more about this. But, duck hunters listening now to realize what it was like back then, you know, just such a different world. Now, I guess the benefit is there are also a lot more ducks out there to hunt back then. We're coming right back. More of our conversation of hunting the Mobile Tensaw Delta and truly back in the day, not 1990s back in the day, way back in the day. We'll do that when we come back right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along with us on this Saturday. And a great history lesson for those of us that love the causeway, love duck hunting. And Pee-wee and Dude in with the Arthur Gonzalez, Dude Marston. And we're talking about growing up hunting the causeway. And it's funny, the time difference not to say, but there's some decades between us in age. But to hear, just during the break here, hearing how dude was talking about what he did when he was cut loose and had a driver's license and could go down the causeway, same thing happened to me in the 1980s. I mean, it was like, the people, like, it was the biggest adventure and place to go that a kid could go. Now looking back at it, we were so lucky to have that growing up.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I was right on the cutting edge of it because in the 50s, we had a few ducks. We had a lot of ducks, and it was wide open.
What's that number? You and I talked about it before we started the show. You said one of the flyovers 1 year. Do you remember what year it would have been in or what decade?
I'd say late 50s.
Late 50s. Okay.
I'm guessing mid-50s, late 50s. In that range, John Edie was the game warden, federal game warden here. And he, in fact, this is another story. We killed two mallards one day. They were banded next to each other. We killed them.
Oh, wow.
They were banded the year before on the Mobile Causeway.
They banned them here. They came back here.
We killed a pair. And they were banded. I still got the bands, as a matter of fact. If anybody doesn't believe me, I'll go.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's another story.
Numbers in succession, I guess, on those bands.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That is cool.
In fact, there was one number difference.
Right.
One number difference.
That is pretty good stuff.
But anyway, what was he talking about?
What were you talking about? The numbers of ducks. Mid-50s.
There was 50,000 ducks in the Mobile Delta in one of the high years.
Okay, so for people,
I guess that would be the mid-50s.
Okay, for people, so put that in perspective, y'all, if you're listening tonight. So, and we hadn't gotten this year's flyover, but our flyovers now have been as weak as 700. A good year will have 1,300 or more going into a season. So 1/50th of what was there in the 50s.
He will tell you. It was a lot of ducks. I mean, the Grand Bay was one duck. You could almost walk across the ducks in Grand Bay. And every bay was full of ducks. Even the south side of the causeway, rafts of canvasbacks and scarps. There were just lots of ducks, lots of ducks.
You know, as the duck numbers came, like I started in the drought years of the 80s when the numbers were supposed to be down. I didn't know any better because that's all I knew. We seemed to have a lot of ducks to me back then. And some of the same species y'all are talking about. Scalp were like, we would often say, nobody's going to shoot scalp till after 9 o'clock. We're not going to shoot a scalp. We're going to try to get a big duck. Like, you don't see a ton of scalp anymore. I mean, they're there, but not like you used to be. I mean, what has changed, you think?
Well, it's the drought.
Yeah.
My son was going to Saskatchewan this year, and the guide called him up and says, don't come. There ain't no ducks.
Yeah, you got to have them made up there to get them down here, but then we got to get them here. There's some years we have them, and they just don't seem to make it like they used to.
Well, what I have seen is high and low ebbs in concentration. The year that they were pintails were 10 points.
Mm-hmm. Now, wait a second. People, now you got to stop here because there are people, okay. There's a lot of younger people. I came in at the end of the point system because people, they just know that, you know, the 330, the 550, the 660 season framework. But yeah, the points days, you had to count your ducks by how many points they cost.
How many points you killed.
Yeah,
right.
Pintail was 10 points.
And how many points did you have?
You could kill 20 pintails.
You could kill 100 points.
Right. So.
So.
But what? So what? Yeah, you had to. But there, towards the end, you had to make sure you really knew what bird you're shooting because it could have taken you over.
There wasn't any doubt about a pintail. Now,
sure,
I don't mind telling you.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I've got pictures of those with them laid out in the garage where it'd be 20 in a pile.
To people now, there may be some years there's not 20. There's not 20. I'm overdoing this, but there's some years you're probably not 20 bull pintails in the entire Delta anymore. You know, I mean, that's...
I understand that. And
they're in Arthur's garage.
No, I tell you, my father was a pintail fanatic, and he would drive on the causeway and find out where they were where they were feeding, and next morning, he would be there.
They're my, if not my favorite duck, my second favorite duck. I understand that passion.
We never went duck hunting when I was younger than driver's age.
Did he go and you didn't go, or did he wait till?
He didn't go.
Okay, okay.
He was working. He was supporting a family, and what we finally did was for us to go. We went basically over to Grand Bay on the Mississippi line.
Okay.
We took a Stoutterbilt boat, let the guy who ran the camp there use it to rent during the week.
And then y'all had it on the weekend.
And then we were out on the Grand Batur Bar whenever one of those Blue Northers would break loose.
What years is it? When did this start? When were y'all starting to hunt down there, Southwest Mobile County?
This was late 70s.
What kind of, I mean, the mix of birds,
It was mostly
redheads.
It was mostly divers.
Yeah.
But every now and then you'd get a pintail or a widgeon or even a gray duck. Every now and then would come floating in. So,
you know, I was asking y'all about how many people were hunting on the causeway back then. How many, like, was it?
No, there was nobody down there when we were down there.
I mean,
the people just weren't there hunting, but we knew that. They were there, and so we.
You're leaving me out.
Yeah, you get you closer to this mic here, dude. Yeah, there you go.
I was there too, and Daddy had a Stouter down there. We same thing. We had actually had a camp down there, and you go out that By Heron, which is a little narrow,
mm-hmm.
pretty small. Little. Have you been there?
I've just recently. Yeah.
And you better know your way out of there.
Yeah, coming out the mouth of that thing, it gets real shallow.
Little pine tops out there. You better stay right by them.
Yep.
And. You go out to those bars. There's about three or four blinds out on that bar, though, and you could. It was always some ducks. You could always, however, I remember getting out there. I was telling Pee Wee earlier, I got out there in the fog one time, and I kept waiting for the fog to lift. I thought these redheads ought to be eating me up with this fog lift because they all. Well, about 11 o'clock in the morning, the fog hadn't lifted, and I had to figure out how to get back to By Heron out off that. Grand Tour Bar out there. That was,
you couldn't open up the GPS or the app on your phone and look at the.
It was dead reckoning. And I can tell you, God bless me, because I don't know how I got in. I couldn't see the bow of the boat. It was that thick.
I think if you grew up hunting down here, whether it's, you know, it was 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, or today, you have a fog story. If you duck hunted much around here, that fog, you know, trying to get in or getting stuck in it, you know, and trying to go. This is really interesting, too. So branching out well beyond just the causeway, you're down South Mobile County hunting back then.
Yeah, at that time, I think, and maybe you can verify this, but I thought causeway was kind of failing in those years, wasn't it? Because I was... I'd rather be on the causeway. It's so much easier.
Right. Closer to the house, yeah.
That's right.
But what was failing? Because, I mean, y'all just painted a picture here of, how many, because, I mean, y'all had it where it had been 50,000. So what's considered failing when you decide to pull out there and go south?
Well, the pintail saved us because when they put those 10 points on a pintail duck, and my brother and I, and Pee Wee and his buddy who hunted with all the time, you had to figure out those pintails. They don't like to decoy much. They like to sail all around you. So
you don't let them make a second pass.
Way out or away from you a little bit and get them to sail. And if they'd sail over you with the belly up, you could bust them out of the sky. But it wasn't a decoying duck. It was just a lot of high shooting.
Right.
It turned out to be.
Wait a second. That there was high shooting going on back then on the causeway? People go, real. Listen to this. They complain about it now, y'all. So, in other words, it's something that's not new.
Yeah, no, those pintails would never fly. They'd never give you a good decoying shot that I saw. Now, you may have, Pee Wee might have a better story than I do.
I told dude that the best year of my life was 1968. When my wife bought me a 14-foot Stouter. So,
it's a good woman right there.
A good woman. Still married to her.
Mm-hmm.
But I had the trailer, had a 12 Buccaneer. That was about the nicest mid-range motor for that boat. But it would plane up. So I started sending my money to Herder's Decoys.
Herder's Decoys, yes.
In Minnesota. And every year I'd get me a couple of dozen coming south. So,
How many decoys did y'all used to set back then? Whether maybe, I know it changes the kind of hunt you're doing, but walk me through causeway hunts or down in Grand Bay.
Grand Bay or south of the causeway was
100.
100 at least.
100 decoys. I had
all sizes, all all breeds. You know.
You didn't bag them up then. I had a partition in that Stouter that I had built and made. You could just stack them between the back seat and the front seat, and you just had them. I had a big wall built up on both ends, so you just throw them all in there. And you could walk and wade and pick them up.
South of the Causeway you could. Yeah,
I mean, that was made it pretty easy.
Yep.
It was always knee-deep or something like that.
Well, thinking about moving around, too, y'all, and I'm going to pick your brains. I hadn't talked about this before, but got those 12 Buccaneers running the boats. But let's talk some Causeway hunting. Let's talk north of the Causeway hunting. So some things that I came into that have changed since, because I talked to a kid on the Causeway last year, and I was like, well, did you have to mud paddle out of there? And he looked at me like, what in the world are you talking about? And the mud paddle was the way to extract yourself from a mud flat. Yeah, I mean, y'all run some of those, didn't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I remember being in, Upper Gestang?
Uh-huh.
And tide went out.
When the boat will rock over to the side and let you know how low you're?
It was opening day, and, we milled the blind in there. It was perfect. We had a good spot, and there was just gadwalls everywhere. And I met this probably in the 70s, but airboats cranked up in the morning, and there wasn't a duck inside. It was terrible. We never shot a duck. We shot coots all day, but that's about all we could do. And then we tried to mud paddle out of there, and I noticed when we'd bear down on the mud paddle, the whole island would move with us. That milfoil would just, the whole
you're moving the whole thing
was moving with the boat. It took us hours to get out of there. It was terrible. Sweat down to your underwear, man. It was awful.
I told
my brother was with me. I said, man, the last time I'm ever south of the Causeway, here we come.
Well, his brother was a contemporary of mine, and so we hunted together a lot, dove, quail, whatever we could shoot at. But we started hunting together, his boat and my boat together. Okay. And that way we could kind of position ourselves on the area we were hunting to where we would leave a little trough to where the birds could work up into the
right
between us. And that way you could get a little bit better shooting that way.
And the fact that you probably had somebody, because they're your friends, are not going to shoot at a swing duck that's coming to you.
Exactly. Right.
It
doesn't work that way as much when there's somebody you don't know in that blind.
Don't count on that. Even when your best friend's right next to you, next blind,
don't count on them not shooting your swing duck.
No. They got a shot. They're going to take it.
But it was, tell you another aspect of it. Before the duck hunting, my children, all they wanted to do was, Papa, when are we going duck blinding? Going to build the blinds.
See, I fail with my children. They never wanted to do that. But it's.
But mine, just the boys, even the girls, you know, all they wanted to do was go cut some cane, and then we would go into the Causeway, and then we'd always stop somewhere for lunch.
Aha.
Have a soda pop or something.
There's motivation for it. Yeah, it's, you know.
Duck blinding was a big social event.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny if people who don't do what we have all done will probably ride down in the next 3 weeks and say, I wonder who's clearing all the Roseau cane down here. You know, I mean, sitting out there with a machete cutting it. It's good to know that was going on. Same thing's going on today.
Yes.
Yeah. We built blinds out of everything, though. Easiest thing was to go over there and get some bamboo and stick you kind of a frame. And then you would put the other cane inside that, and it would always be there. But before Mayor Park was over there, there was a place to get all kind of those tie-tie bushes.
Yeah.
We cut the whole bush down and take it out there. We had an island or a blind out there.
We're going to continue these conversations coming right back. More with Dude and Pee-wee. We were talking about duck hunting on the Mobile Tensaw Delta and down the south end of the county from back in the day on through today. Just bring this conversation in as we get rolling back here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Like, you put a bunch of duck hunters in a room, We talk about pintails, talk about widgeon. We didn't get the teal conversation, but we're going to talk some divers. But the M word came up, gentlemen talking about mallards. And not, you know, Delta not known for mallards, but we all obsessed on mallards, whether it was the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. Mallards were a big deal. Sounds like it was a big deal back then, too.
Of course it was. There was a few people that specialized in it, and L.G. Adams was one of them. He had the sporting goods store. He was a mallard hunter and a duck caller, and the other one I'm thinking about is Bud Hageman, and he had a Negus boat with a little boat inside, and he'd go secret spots. He would never tell you anywhere, but he'd see him on the causeway getting ready, and I'd say, Buzz, where you headed? I don't know. But anyway, he had two boats, and he'd get somewhere up there and go up those little creeks and find the little mallard spot up there. And he was good at it, too. He was a good caller.
You know who lies more than trout fishermen? It's a duck hunter. Oh, we won't tell you where we're going.
He's a sportsman.
He was a little golfer, too. So a little bit of everything. Hey, nice guy.
And we think about the technology today, but the way – but you were talking about, dude, the partitions you put in your boat to put decoys in. You're talking about different things like – duck hunters, no matter what, would figure out a way to fix, you know, they were always making a tweak and say, okay, this needs, you know, we'd figure out something.
Yeah.
I mean, a deer hunter, you know, just go get on a stand, and, you know, I'm a deer hunter, but I mean, just go get on a stand. You don't have to figure out how to get to the deer. You had to figure out how to get to ducks.
Yeah, you had to figure out how to wrap those decoys up so you didn't have a big tangle mess, too, which mm-hmm. is always the case. Every time I believe I ever went, it was always a tangle mess of decoys. We used to have to make your own weights because unless you could find some piece of iron or something, an old spark plug or mm-hmm. whatever you could find to make a weight out of, I ended up cutting a hole in the brick and pouring hot lead into a brick with a loop on the top to make decoys, to make weights. I still got a bunch of them. I don't know why I kept them. But anyway, then if you used herders, for example, they would send you those horseshoe weights with your decoys.
I didn't ever use them.
And they were pretty good. You could put the head through the hole in the
right
horseshoe, and it kind of helped a little bit.
I'm thinking about, just as you're talking, thinking about all the types of decoy weights I've seen over the years. And, I mean, duck hunters will figure out a way. I mean, for, you know, 1 ounce bank sinker to something you poured in, to spark plug, to anything to hold them down. Today they're all pre-made and it's easy to do. It takes all the fun out of it, maybe. I don't know. But mallard hunting back then, it was so obviously it was still as big a deal as now. Probably more mallards back then than now.
Yeah, well, the other thing was if you hunted on the causeway a lot, you're shooting a lot of diving ducks. They never flew very high. So finally you wanted a duck that you could look up and see.
Instead of
look down the barrel on the horizontal to shoot. Those diving ducks, they just never came in from a high elevation. So mallard hunting was special because you can also look up instead of look down.
Like back then, like the percentage, and obviously the same thing was true when I was in the 80s. There's those secret back of the creek spots to go kill mallards. But did you see mallards more in the open bays, or and was it the same as it? You know, they just weren't there. They were back in the woods.
They weren't there. You had gadwalls up high.
Okay.
Pintails up high.
What about gadwalls? You know, gray ducks, gadwalls, I mean, are 90% of what we pursue around here these days on the Delta. Back then, did they make, was it 90%? Was it 10%?
50%.
50?
Yeah. It was a pretty good show of them most of the time.
It was a nice duck to kill. And like you said, like I just said, they weren't divers. They were.
Yeah, they work up high.
In the air a little bit.
What about teal? What about green wings? I mean, that was a big deal when I started. I do, too. But I remember it seemed to me, and I'm not talking science here, I'm just talking about anecdotal. In the 80s when I started hunting, it seemed like we had way more green wings than I see now.
I hadn't hunted teal in a long time, but we did hunt them a lot.
Right.
When they were.
Mostly blue wings I used to shoot.
Yeah, the blue wings in the early
season. So I love the early season. Yeah, I was just talking about mixed indoor and big duck season. You know,
never saw many teal. There was a few. Some of these days you'd probably. Even out on the bar, you never knew what you were going to kill out there.
True. True. You mentioned.
You just took whatever came.
Wait a second. You took whatever came.
Well, some days.
But I say some days you probably were choosy.
Yeah, especially when the pintails were out there.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, it'd take whatever whatever you got, whatever you got.
I expected there to be this big difference in your story, dude, and Pee Wee's story about what you do, but it sounds a lot like duck hunters, the same kind of story, maybe more ducks, but there are some days you just take what you can get.
A lot of those days. I'd be jealous. I'd see Pee Wee down there busting those ducks out of the sky, and Pee Wee's excellent shot. And he also graduated those three inch magnums before anybody else knew about them.
Extra artillery power.
He was busting those ducks, and I looked down there and said, "Damn, Pee Wee just killed another duck out of the sky down there. One of those
early birds."
Yeah. So I'm with my brother, and I said, "He got that we don't have." Three inch magnums, what he's got.
Yeah. It's the arms race. Now we got to get that. If he's got it, we got to get
you
it.
You didn't tell him about it, huh, Arthur?
Here it is.
Yeah, I want to get you close too. And I also want to talk about it's something we discussed during the break. Speaking of divers and the way that duck hunters pay attention to weather and play, you know, ducks are in certain places on certain winds and they're not others, and right. Those things ring true with all duck hunters, no matter where they are. You tell a story about catching a northeast wind, a big northeast wind, and where you'd go, where you'd shift for duck hunting then.
Well, I would go to my family home on the bay, and
Eastern
ducks
Shore,
would trade up and down that east coast of Mobile Bay. Of course, they fed out a lot into the deeper water, but the wind would make a move, you know.
Right.
I mean, they'd get enough, and then they'd fly, looking for a place to rest. So,
and that place on the northeast wind's right up against the eastern shore, right?
On the bank, right.
So where would you – I'm going to out you here. Where would you make a blind in a situation like that?
If I would find where they were resting first.
Mm-hmm.
If I knew where that was – I'd be close to it.
What if it happened to be close to somebody's pier?
Well, most of the time now,
could you hide under a pier?
Many people that stayed year round,
right,
on the eastern shore.
I think statute of limitations has run. I mean, could you hide under a pier and shoot ducks?
Well, unless you came by boat, you'd have to walk through somebody's property to get there.
That's right. That's right. It just seems like a ready-made. But, I mean, that would have been scalp, redheads, you said canvasbacks a couple of times, which gets my attention.
The Louisiana folks call it a doe gray.
Yeah.
You know, they're just a gray duck.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter whether it was a greater or lesser or, you know.
What about canvasbacks? Y'all both said canvasbacks. One of my favorite ducks. You know, I think about the two that are most center on my wall, pintail and a canvasback. What were those numbers like back then?
The canvasbacks were
pretty good numbers.
Pretty good numbers of them, right. There were big rafts of them out in the south of the coast.
They would decoy pretty well, too.
Reliable enough? I mean, you know, it seems like anymore, people were killing some canvasbacks here and there, and the numbers, I think 800,000 in the fall flight this year, somewhere in there. But could y'all plan a hunt for canvasbacks?
Oh yeah,
there were that many that you said, okay, we're going canvasback hunts today. I got enough
out off like on the Blakely Bar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know how far that bar goes out.
I do.
You're in the middle of Mobile Bay, and
you still walk around. Yep.
And, so they were out that far.
But there were enough reliable canvasback numbers. Y'all could make a canvasback hunt.
Sure, no doubt, no doubt.
When I went duck hunting, I went duck hunting.
Too. Special.
Do what?
I had decoys.
Yeah.
That were canvasback decoys, but they were. I don't give them credit for a lot of brains. They were. You kill one, and if there's two of them, the other one would come right back to you.
I like that kind of duck.
Yeah, I do.
Dude, I like that duck. That's my favorite kind of duck.
We're trying to wait till you fly right over the boat and see if we can drop him in the boat.
You probably should let it. You probably should let it go so it could reproduce and get those genetics in there.
Think about that.
You also mentioned something that shooting coots, y'all were doing
last
that.
Last resort. Something to shoot at.
But it did happen.
Oh, it happened to me.
It happens to the best of us.
Yeah, and especially in those upper bays. Now, they're not out there on the causeway much. I mean, south of the causeway.
But you got that armada comes through.
Coots out there, Pee-wee. I don't think I ever
Never have shot one out, though.
But I know that at some point, the coot armada in Chocolata is enough to blacken the sun. So that's still true.
Yeah. I had a friend that wanted them. He had a little barbecue thing behind his house, and he fried coots. And he said, bring me as many coots as you can, and I'll give you 3 shells for every coot.
Oh, man.
What a deal.
I don't think I ever came out very well on it.
Because you had to shoot 6 to get one.
I didn't think you could even eat coots.
Oh yeah.
He loved them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He had a frying, deep fry thing out there, and he'd get out there with his buddies. I won't give you a name, but he called me every year, bring me some coots.
Yeah.
I want to ask y'all a more pointed question, too, for both of you. Why'd you stop hunting on the Causeway? When was it and why?
I would guess late 70s, something like that. What do you think, Pee-wee?
Mine was probably the early 80s.
Because I think I remember, unless it would have been your son signed, I remember seeing your name on signs.
Some family necessities
right.
might have even encouraged me to sell my boat.
Gotcha.
When you got 4 children and they're going to college and just have to quit every now and then, you go to other interests like dove hunting, deer hunting, something like that.
Honeydewing.
whatever mama said do.
Yeah. Know,
coaching baseball and basketball.
Right.
And
yeah.
Things like that. But
do you miss it?
Of course. There was no greater thrill in my life than to push my boat into a blind and then look over my shoulder and see 2 pintails drake light in my decoys, and it wasn't shooting time yet.
And you got to see, will they stay? Will they stay for shooting light?
Well, I made them stay.
I love it.
Yeah, Statute of Limitations at far gone.
That's the name of the show. It's going to be Statute of Limitations. Dude, when you said late 70s, you stopped?
I remember I joined a hunting club. Mike Ward may have something to do with it. Uh-huh. I was into deer hunting at that time, and I finally got invited to be in a club, and all of a sudden I gave up a lot of duck hunting to start
deer hunting
in the woods and turkey hunting, deer hunting, and all that kind of stuff. So kind of changed my attitude about ducks. It's a lot easier. And I didn't get cold and wet.
That's right. The things y'all just listed, I mean, deer hunting and dove hunting, all that is a lot easier. But, you know, what was amazing is I didn't have a club to hunt in when I was young. And that's what I keep thinking about the Causeway. And I wish the duck numbers were like they were. But it gave somebody like me, a kid, we had a boat. It wasn't the duck boat. We had a boat. And with that boat, that whole adventure of that delta was open to me, you know, all the freedom, you know, that, I mean, you could just go hunting. You didn't have to have a camp. You didn't have to, I mean, you could just go hunting. I mean, those things are, I mean, few and far between anymore. Not a lot of places right. like this.
Exactly.
I agree with you. It was so easy. Yeah. You had a driver's license and a boat. And even if you didn't have it before the trailers even came along, we had a boat over there. And if I had any kind of opportunity in the hunting season, and by then it started, seems like, before Thanksgiving and went through January. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was 3 or 4 months of duck hunting.
Yeah.
And
we had the different splits. We had the, yeah, we had, what was that? Would y'all have that split? Because when I came in, we had 2 splits, I think.
I don't remember any splits.
Okay, so splits probably came in the 80s then. Yeah, we had two. We had like an early split and then 2 weeks off and another split.
Yeah.
So what other boats were there besides Lawrence Stouter boats back in the day? What other boats would you hardly even fish or hunt out of?
Well, Negus?
The boats at the fishing camps is what we used first.
But a lot of those were Stouter, though, weren't they?
Along.
A lot of those were Stouter, weren't they?
Yeah, they were all made by Lawrence Stouter. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Of course, 79 took him out with Frederick.
That's right.
So that all ended right there. But he had every one of those fish camps over there had his boats. And they had a live well in one side and a dry well in the other. Remember that?
I do. I had one. Yeah.
And they were built heavy duty. And whatever you put on there, you had, like Pee Wee said, you had to carry everything you had. You had your motor and your decoys and all your guns and all your old clothes and all the equipment in your back of your car.
That's right.
And I remember I had a Ford back when I was in school. I was, let's see, that would be 58 or 9. And I had a car, and I kept the decoys in there all year long. I mean, I had a back seat full of decoys and hunting stuff, and it stayed in there, and a motor in the trunk.
You must not dated much back in those days.
I'm not going into that.
Yeah.
Hey, we're coming right back. Our conversation about duck hunting stories as we get ready, just weeks away from the start of duck season here in Alabama. Be right back on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you along, and great talking to Dude and Pee-wee, Arthur
great
Gonzalez,
stories.
Dude Marston,
great
talking about
stories.
History. Yes, great stories of hunting the Mobile Tensaw Delta. So maybe you can picture some of the things they've described. If you're riding across listening to this right now and look out there, and I'm just picturing those big rafts of canvasbacks, too. And the idea that in the 50s, I want people to come back to this, that there was a flyover, that there was 50,000 ducks in the Delta. And, I mean, I hope it's better, but we'll be 1,200, 1,400 when they fly over, you know, right there before Thanksgiving this year. I mean, that'll be good. It's nothing like it used to be.
That was the word I got. And
that's a good word.
I can tell you, this was probably in mid-50s, there was a lot of ducks. I mean, all those bays that you're talking about, mm-hmm. they were full of ducks, every one of them. And I remember catwalls and pintails and widgeons, like Grand Bay.
Mm-hmm.
I hunted there a lot on that west bank, and it was just, you couldn't see the end of the ducks. There was a raft out there that went almost all the way across the bay. And, of course, you had the side of the bay where the food was.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped out after a while. They got hungry.
Yeah, they finally go risky, leave that raft and come on in.
Yeah. And same way on the south side of the causeway, Pee-wee. When that wind would blow and those ducks would move out in the bay, because we'd ran them all off the bar.
Right.
And they were out there swimming in the waves and whitecaps, and we sat there saying, I know they're coming back.
Well, that, you know what? It's funny how much ducks are just doing duck things. Because, I mean, I guarantee you this year you get a big south wind and rough everything up on the bar, and those ducks start pouring into Chocolata and Batty and Del Vanna.
Got up into the upper bays. That made them go south, and then they would sit for a while and say, we got to go back north.
See, that, and as much as I think all these things have changed, that behavior right there is the exact one you'd see. If we all went, if three of us went and hunted in 2020 this season, y'all hop in with me, we'll see the same thing go on here this year. Just a lot fewer ducks, but they do the same thing.
Well, that's the way it was. That's you kind of learned after a while where they're going to be and where they're going to have to be. So when you set up in the right place, you're going to get some shots.
Well, weather was the feature that I appreciated mostly.
Yeah,
I mean, every now and then I knew there was a norther going to break loose. I'd take the day off from work.
Yep. Well, but you also have said here, the weather and the wind direction specified where you went. It's
right.
Not just, hey, there's weather, I'm going to go duck hunting. It's, hey, it's doing this, I should go look here or I should go look there, right?
If I knew which way the wind was going to break from, and I had my boat and trailer.
Right. Where you could move. Yeah, you could die.
Where I could go, I'd pick me a good spot.
If you knew enough, you'd hunt the weather.
Mm-hmm.
You'd wait for that norther that he's talking about. You'd wait for the good weather. And good old south wind wasn't a bad thing either, because it had to blow hard. And I remember one day I was in Grand Bay, and that wind, it was whitecaps in Grand Bay. It was blowing like crazy. I don't know if it was a storm or whatever. And I was with a friend, I'm not going to give you his name, but we ended up in that northeast pocket of Grand Bay. And we just, within 20 minutes, we had two limits.
It's, the weather dictates you knew where to go.
Well, yeah. And the good news, it was a blind waiting for us. We didn't have to build any.
So what do y'all think? What's your conclusion on why the ducks are not there anymore? Does anybody here have a conclusion on that? Why we went from 50,000 in the Delta to 1,000, 1,500?
Good question. I don't have a clue.
I don't think they get this far south anymore.
Some of the short-stopping is that talking about up there in the, where is it, different places?
Well, yeah, through the, and there's, yeah, and there's a lot more people that hunt, that care about hunting ducks up there. And also, more than, it seems like there's more people hunting ducks down here just through, you know, there's more pressure.
Really?
More people.
Yeah, more people. And it's easier. Nobody's breaking mud paddles and having to push pull and do all that.
They ruined that, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, back then you had to really want to go get a duck, didn't you?
It did. In fact, I swam after a few of them.
Yep.
You take a oar and your knees and you lay the oar down. You kind of like a duck or a chicken walking across the yard. You'd have to lay those paddles down and put your knee on them and go out and get that dead duck.
That's why you always had to have a friend with a dog, or a good dog.
I didn't have a dog.
Yeah.
I never did have a dog. I always wished I did, but I never took time to train one or
best,
want one.
Best dog somebody else's that's yes. trained and invite them to go with you. That's always what, y'all, it's been an absolute pleasure.
It sure has.
Will you come back and see us soon?
Anytime.
All right. I really appreciate it. Dude Marson and Pee Wee Gonzalez, Arthur Gonzalez, joining us here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. We'll see y'all again next week. Remember, check us out, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.